Hi, I hope you all enjoyed your wonderful lightship healing experience that you had listening to the show just before ours. Hi, my name is Jasmine, and I'm here with my co-host Benjamin. Hey, Benjamin.
Hello, everybody. Lovely to have you here on the air with us.
Yes, and so welcome to our show, The Spring of Life. And we're all about empowering you to design your life on purpose, your way, and allowing you to have the tools that you can pull out of your pocket anytime you want in any situation you're moving through in your world, in your heart, and in your circumstances, so that you can master your world. And that's what we're all about. And so, welcome on this day. I don't know where you live, but I'll tell you, spring seems to be trying to break through here, and it feels good. It feels good. It's still rather icy out and still a little tricky on the bag of tricks with the weather. But what I really love to talk about today, and I invite you to join us here on chat or give us a call, is truth. The subject of the week and the subject for me for many, many years has been truth. And I find that perhaps to be one of the trickiest endeavors and the trickiest, cleverest subjects there could possibly be in humanity, especially and most specifically at this time of what I'll call spiritual awakening, healing, enlightenment. And on it goes. It seems to me that as we peel away one layer of hierarchy and dogmatic perspectives, we trade them in sometimes for another. And we call that the truth. But you know, recently I've studied with a man called Dr. Richard Bandler. And I've been playing a lot with the neurology of the brain. And just finished a beautiful 6-day conference in sunny Orlando, Florida. And I learned quite a bit more about neurohypnotic repatterning. And where I'd like to begin, I'd like to ask my wonderfully versed, technologically focused, and specific-minded co-host Benjamin to open us into the discussion about the mechanics of truth. Because, believe it or not, there are mechanical, technical processes that take place in your brain that allow you to decide and to accept, to reveal to yourself, to change, to platform or not yourself about, on, and with the truth. So, Ben, talk to me.
So, just before we get into the mechanics of that, I want to say that yes, we can absolutely play with the energetics, but for this one, I think we will go a little further into the mechanics of it, because the mechanics of truth is also something that I have played with for a long time. Because after all, how do we even discern what is true? What is true for us? What is true out there? Because very often we do try to find something in our world that is a nugget of truth. Now, how do we know what's a coincidence? What is actually happening? How are the strings pulled? Well, those are all questions that sometimes are really difficult to discern. Now, when we get into the understanding of what truth is, it becomes certainly a lot more interesting in so far that then we can actually understand the process of truth. And now, that is actually also where the key is, because very often we make truth a thing. It is almost like truth becomes its own being. It has its own life. And we feel that when we see truth, it is almost as solid as the chair that we might be sitting on or the glass of water that we drink out of it. It almost feels solid.
It's as though we personify the truth. We take an idea and turn it into a table or a chair and make it as real as perhaps one would consider their offspring or their lover. And we can defend that personification of that idea, of that truth, with our lives. I mean, some of us will even begin a war based on having the truth and wanting to beat the truth into somebody or beat the truth out of someone. Tell me how that works, Ben.
Well, the thing is that we then start treating truth as something that is almost like as real as an object. Let's take a pen or a glass of water, for example. A glass of water has size, shape, color, and location. There will always, same with a pen, it has a size, shape, color, and location, and you can describe these four qualities for any one particular object that you look at. However, when we talk about something being the truth, you cannot point to where the truth is. You could maybe say it's in my mind, but it doesn't have an actual location, nor does it have a size, shape, color. Any of these qualities just aren't necessarily part of what we would call more of an idea or a thought. Now, what's important to recognize is that in order to establish anything as the truth for ourselves in our worlds, we have to go through some type of determining process. We have to figure out in one way or another what truth is. Because, for example, if I say, is it true that 2 plus 2 equals 4? You can very easily probably say for you in your world, yeah, that's actually accurate. 2 plus 2 equals 4. Now, the thing is, though, what process did you undergo in order to establish something like that? Now,
I would say that in that, Ben, you just use the word accurate. And for me, using the word accurate has a very different connotation and feeling and ideology behind it than the word truth. Is 2 plus 2 is 4? Is that accurate? As far as I know, yes, it is. That's what I've been taught. Mm-hmm. Is it true? I don't know. I'm not sure. To be honest, I mean, it certainly seems to be an accurate way to go about doing mathematics that I've learned since I was knee-high to a mushroom cloud. But, did I say that out loud? But is it true? I just finished blogging about truth. And, you really helped me with that. So because you brought into play how it works, how we make pictures in our mind about the truth.
So let's go a little further into that, because in order to establish anything as truth in our world, we have to do some type of process within our mind to establish whether any question or any statement is true. So let's say, for example, I, for myself, am currently wearing a sweater. So if someone asked me, are you wearing a sweater? I would say, yes, that's true. Now, how does that actually work in the mind? Well, in order to understand the question itself, it is that I have to first make a mental image of what it means to wear a sweater and also include myself in that picture as well, what it would be like if I was wearing a sweater. So then I compare that to what I am currently noticing on my body. I make that second image of what's currently happening, and now I actually compare the two. Now, when I'm comparing these two, and this is a mental process which most of us undergo so quickly we won't even notice that it's happening because it has become an unconscious activity. The same way that when you started driving the first time, it was something you had to focus on, but later on it became so unconscious that you can listen to the radio and talk to someone and do so many other things while you're focusing on traffic also and don't even have to really think about these individual aspects anymore because they have become automatic. Now, the same goes for determining whether something is true or not. There, you essentially do a process of comparison with the statement or the question that you get, then in comparison to your framework of the world or your memory bank, for example. And depending on whether there's a match between the two or not, you either feel then, for example, if it's an accurate, there's a match between the two, then you will feel a kinesthetic feeling that feels more as an up feeling or a good feeling. And if the two don't match, most likely you're going to feel some type of kinesthetic feeling of a downward motion or something that doesn't quite, it feels a little off. And depending on whether you get that how that kinesthetic feeling feels to you at that point will then determine whether something is actually more true for you in your world or not. This is not necessarily how every single person does it, But it is one of the unconscious processes that most people will use in order to even determine whether something is true or not. Now, the thing is, we can easily say, oh, that's true or that's not true. But when we look at it similar to computer programming, it's like having written pages and pages of code in order to simply get one single line of code as feedback. It might say, that's true, or that isn't. And it's very fascinating, all the different processes that may happen in the background at an unconscious level that aren't even becoming conscious until we start talking about it, until we start examining what really has to happen in the mind in order to come to these types of conclusions.
Well, what I love that you've connected it to computer code, because what I get from my experience and perspective, what I've learned is that, and this may or may not be true for computers, so you'll please, I know you're a computer dude, so you can correct me, please, if I'm using the wrong analogy. But from what I understand, computer code is programmed and it stays the way it is until I change the responses of, let's say, true or not true, will stay the same unless I change the code.
Well, the code is the code, and the code essentially just executes certain functions. It is sort of say what the computer does. But you can, for example, now feed it certain types of information. And depending on what kinds of information you feed into it, that will then determine what kind of results come out at the end.
See, now I enjoy working with you, Ben, on the radio shows that we host, and also on a professional level, and also hanging out with you because you're really cool, and we have these interesting conversations. And what I most enjoy about you is that your perspective very much complements mine, and comes somewhat from a different angle. It comes from a different aspect. It comes from a different cut in the diamond, yet it still points to the same brilliance. And I enjoy what you're saying, and I understand it certainly more so since that conference. And where I'm looking at the truth from is this. So many people, I've had this has been a little thorn in my side for a long time. And I had some experiences in the past where I would hear people say, I am truth. This is truth. I know the truth. I mean, we could point to religious foundational teachings on our planet, and they're all saying they've got the only way and the truth, and the word is the truth, and we go to war because we have the truth, and we cut off friendships because we know better, and how the characteristics and the agendas that we've placed upon other people that are a direct result of the images we make in our mind that is completely comparative from our inner workings, we use to chop other people up. Literally and figuratively. And I, for one, have had enough. I have been hit over the head with the battering ram of truth and asked to stand down and swallow these concepts, because to me, truth is not real. There is no truth. And I mean, I've been sitting with this for many, 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 many moons. And the one person in particular to who I can gratefully say thank you to for really shoving this under my nose and my whole head in the pile of the truth, regardless if they were lying the next minute to somebody else on the phone or not, and then turning around and saying they were truthsayers. And I was frozen. And as a child, most of us, I can't really speak for anyone else, nor would I want to, but I can certainly say in my world, I was told to tell the truth. And when I was telling the truth, if it didn't suit what my mother believed to be the truth she wanted to hear to come out from me, did you break the vase? No, I didn't. So in her head, she saw that I did. It could have been the only possible explanation for this unfoldment, the chaos of the broken glass. And so I say no, which was the truth. And she told me I was lying, that I should be telling the truth. So my question is, whose truth are we supposed to tell? And if we're only ever programmed in relation to our code and experiences, and we keep changing and evolving, and the person I had a grudge against today, I don't have a grudge against tomorrow, and the truth that I want to hear doesn't come, and so I call them a liar, I'm really only ever in my own world of truth. And why is it that so many of us want to go and build armies based on a concept or an ideology? I mean, to name a thing, to quote Richard Bach in the, to name a thing is harmless, but to name an idea is to create a religion. And don't you dare. That's the quote. And why are we doing this? Why do we do this?
That's a good question. Now I can fill in a little more about that, because the way that we need to work in our minds in order to function in this world is to start creating a model within our minds that allows us to navigate the world better. For example, if I have had the experience that walking into things doesn't feel so good, walking around them certainly is more pleasant, to make a very simple example, then I can start to walk around things and have a much easier time at moving through my world, because I'm starting to gain different programs, so to say, different parts of my code that allow me to navigate my environment better and better. Now, the thing is that we constantly keep adapting our own code, and that's something that actually is quite nice, because that's actually where our minds are a little different than, for example, computers are, is that we are self-correcting in our code. We are constantly adjusting our programs. And the thing is, though, when we do start to develop different ideas about our world that seem to consistently work over and over and over again, that's usually the point when we start to believe that we have found a truth, like walking into things is not such a good idea, for example. That seems pretty true to me. And so the thing is, then we actually start to birth this solid idea that has worked across so many circumstances that it actually seems to almost bear its own life, because not only does it seem to apply to me, it seems to apply to a lot of other people. And so it is almost like this seems to be a truth that's outside of me. And it seems like it has a truth value that goes beyond what I'm just thinking in my own mind. However, there isn't really ever any particular truth that is apart from my thinking processes. Because even if I write this truth down, put it in a book, and then just leave it somewhere, this truth doesn't do anything onto itself. There first has to be someone that needs to reinterpret it by reading it and then process it and determine it for themselves to be truth as well in order to have any effect whatsoever. So to say, this sort of an idea doesn't really have its own life. If I write it in a book, it doesn't start to walk around. It doesn't start to really adopt a size, shape, color, or location, or on top of that, any behavior onto itself. It has to actually be processed in one way or another. And in a certain sense, and this is similar to what they talk about in the movie Inception, an idea actually is similar to a virus in that it can never actually survive entirely only on its own. It needs to have a host in order to keep reproducing itself, in order to keep living within another organism, because somehow these ideas just don't seem to have their own life onto themselves.
Yeah. No, go ahead. Okay. Oh, sorry. Yes, I was listening to you. Is it my turn to talk now?
it looked to me like you were waiting for a gap. And so what becomes really important here then is that we start to actually recognize that truth isn't necessarily a thing. such as we actually use it in the English language. We make it a subject, we make it a noun. But truth is more like a verb. It's more like an activity that we do. It needs to be something that we continuously upkeep in order to actually have some motion in it. So it's not even really such that we have the truth, but it's more like we are doing things such as truthing. We need to do something in order to have the truth come alive within our own minds and then feel a certain way about it. That's usually how it ends. You feel one way or another, because that's usually the final indication of whether you feel that you know something or not. If you know something, it gives you a feeling of certainty. If you don't know something, well, feels a little more wishy-washy. It might actually, and if you feel it goes against what you know, someone proclaims something that isn't true, it might actually make you feel bad. And by people proclaiming different truths, that's oftentimes how they can make each other feel bad, because they've not only now started getting this idea of what their own truth is, but now they're discussing how their truth is general or maybe even universal, and someone else says, no, my truth is universal, and now they start to fight a war over who's got the universal truth, when really we're not recognizing that we're both doing a truthing process. And the funny thing is that very often we do believe that when we do have a truth, that it means automatically that everything else has to be wrong that doesn't agree with that truth. Either there is a glass here or there isn't a glass here. It has to be binary. Only one of the two can be true. But maybe some of the truths that we do get to experience in our world aren't quite that binary. Because when we start to play with different perspectives of different truths, we can actually start to understand that maybe truths that seemed to be mutually exclusive can actually both be true at the same time. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be about the truth, whether there is a glass here or not, but whether I'm a success or a failure, or whether being a failure has to be a good or a bad thing. Now we're getting into value judgments, that if we allow ourselves to understand that all of these are processes, this whole thing of having ideas and perspectives on things becomes a lot more fluid, becomes a lot more malleable. We can start working with this entire process of beliefs in a different way, because truth doesn't have to be the static thing that is outside of ourselves that we just have to get by some process of assimilation, but rather we can start to see the process for the process itself and start playing with it that way. And then we can also start recognizing how we create those maps in our minds that allow us to map out the territory that's outside of ourselves, and with that get better and better at becoming more accurate, at becoming better masters in navigating our environments, not only outside of ourselves, but in our minds as well. And that is where true mastery starts. That is actually the place too where you do start to have your magic wand, because all of a sudden things that you didn't even believe were possible before might become possible to an extent that wasn't even visible to you before. Yeehaw!
That was very well done, Benjamin. Bravo. And I just could give you a standing ovation. That was well done. Thank you. Very well done. Now, you know, there was a few thoughts went through me, and that we spoke the other evening about, well, we've been speaking about truth for a while, and I've been considering it and sitting with it and playing with all sorts of perspectives on it, especially the emotional ramifications and the ways in which we shut other people down with it, and the way we use the realization of truth as a battering ram and a tool to dominate and to control others and to corner them and confine them. And the way we do that to ourselves, we believe false truths about ourselves. How can that be? Well, you know, Ben, you told me a story recently about truths based on self-preservation, that in Germany, in the legal system, if somebody lies and they're found to be lying, it's not really taken so horrendously as it might be here in North America, because they actually take into consideration within that legal system that people are making choices. And in the moment, if, you know, they say, did you steal that car? And we make pictures in our mind, and I may know that I did. Those were the actions that I did indeed take. I stole a vehicle. Yet when I'm asked in the court of law or by a police officer, did I do it? I make these pictures and I point to the outcomes that are desirable or non-desirable in my inner world through comparison, which looks like if I say yes to this person, I could be wearing an orange jumpsuit for the next 5 to 10 years, or whatever color jumpsuits they're using currently in Germany. And
they might have a different style over there.
Yeah, it could be a three-piece Armani suit. I'm never sure. They're also styling
there. Would be
there.
More Hugo Boss.
Hugo
than
Boss.
Armani.
That's right. That's right. It'll be lovely, but nevertheless, is that do I want to wear a suit for the next 5 to 10? And so that feels like, even though I could tell the truth of my actions, the outcome, in comparison to perhaps saying no, because the truth that really makes me feel better right now as this question is being asked of me is that I would rather not be wearing that Hugo Boss suit. I would rather be, at my friend's house having a Wiener Schnitzel and a cafe and going out perhaps dancing. And so they recognize that. Again, it's a game that we play through a process of inner comparatives. So the truth changes. Is anyone ever not telling the truth? This is the way I like to look at things. And there's a wonderful woman out there who is a world stage teacher, and her name is Byron Katie. And she does something called The Work. You can get it free online. You can. She gives her work away. You can buy books and sit with her and in conference, work with her facilitators, whatever works for you. But one of the questions she asks when people make statements in their world, like that person did that on purpose to me, or my husband is, you know, such a jerk. He's such a bad guy. He did this on purpose. He's hurting me. My kids don't listen to me. She says, can you absolutely know that to be true? And that's a powerful question. Now, when we answer from the story of the mind that's been winding this groove and walking this path in our neurology in our brain that becomes like a deer path through the lawn, the immediate answer might be yes. But if we were to stop and sit for a moment, the next time we're gossiping or telling a story that is less than complimentary to ourselves about ourselves or about another, or to another about themselves or another, we might want to stop and take a breath and ask that. Can we ever absolutely know anything to be true? Can we really mind read? Now, I assure you, I am highly intuitive. And when I open with somebody, I can see pictures and hear voices and get memories and emotions just like we all can when we're really tuned in and still and open and we're soft and we're ready and willing to receive whatever shows up. And even those beautiful symbolic images are still subject to interpretation. Can we ever really know what somebody else's motives were? Yet we're so quick to judge. They're a liar. They didn't tell the truth. I know better than you. My immediate reaction, because I've been hit over the head with it so many times, and shoved into a corner with it and told I was lying when I knew that, you know, what I was talking about were actually the actions that I took or didn't take. It wasn't a matter of true or not. It was reporting the facts. I walked across the street and I went to the store. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. Really? When are we going to start recognizing for ourselves that it is only a thought that we have? When are we going to start noticing the stories that we tell ourselves? When we grandstand ourselves, instead of saying, tell me the truth, how about we tell someone, I want to hear this from you. What I really want to hear that would make me feel better or somehow justify where I'm at right now would be this, even if it's not making me feel good. Because that seems to be, pardon the pun, the truth of the matter.
Well, and then when we start to get down to it, there's also the idea of what is true, what isn't true, what is fact, what happened, what didn't happen. There are certain things that seem to be a little more self-evident than others. For example, let me see. You could say something like, well, this gentleman was really sweet to me. And from your perspective, that might be true, but is that actually the truth? Well, it already contains a lot of value judgment. It already contains a lot of ideas about how it was, where you say, for example, he was sweet to you. Well, what does sweet really mean? Well, if you would now become a little more factual, you could say something like, well, he told me that I am beautiful. Now we're talking about a very different type of thing that occurred. Now, if we want to go even deeper into that, we can say that it occurred, but in a certain sense, it's also not happening anymore. In a certain sense, we also have to recognize that we're only working off of memories at this point. If we want to get really down to the nitty-gritty truth, we don't even know that the past really was there back then. We have some memories of it, but it's not here right now. The only thing that is actually here right now is what we are currently perceiving. And then still, it is just a perception. It's not necessarily that we actually perceive a bottle, for example, or a computer, or that we hear particular words. It's really just sound waves. It's different things that somehow we amalgamate in our brains to form a coherent mental picture that eventually just gives us a representation of what's going on right here, right now. So in one sense, we can only ever talk about what we are currently either perceiving with our current senses, or we can talk about different images that we are recreating of the past, for example.
Well, I think that a great exercise when we're caught up in telling stories, and we all get there. I mean, we all go there. It, you know, as we become more aware of it, the stories and the gossip and the judgments, they tend to fade away. And there's a more, a deeper, more expansive awareness about the words that are coming out of our mouths, the feelings that we have in our bodies, and the beliefs that are showing up. And, you know, there's a really great exercise, and it looks like this. Write down that story about that person or about your body or about your boss or your kids or your partner, the person in traffic who cut you off. Write that story out and see how much of his fact is there versus how much drama, how much conceptualization, how much story, how much personal perspective, how much mind reading is in it. And, you know, you might notice, like most people who do this exercise do, myself included, that there isn't a whole lot of fact there. And what I suggest as a panacea, if you will, to this I am truth, it is the truth game that we're playing, is to start perhaps including the word me, my, and I again. Now, I know that certain schools of thought or schools of truth would indicate that including the self can be an act of attachment or an act of ego. Let's not be egoic here about it. I wouldn't want to do that. But, you know, when we begin to do that and say, well, my current truth, and let's remember too that, you know, as we shift and change and have new experiences and change our code and enter new data and delete old files, we shift and we change. So that truth, I know for myself, that all-encompassing, amazing healing modality that I was whipping around all over the place is the most sacred truth, the way to heal. A few years ago, well, you know what? I honor it. I employ it at times with myself and clients. And I assure you, it's not the all-encompassing panacea that I once thought that it was. It's not the truth anymore. And I can look back and laugh at myself and also glean the lesson of recognizing that I change. And so what I've decided to do with my language patterns, and I'm practicing, hey, I catch myself. We all trip and fall and we all can use a friendly reminder. And I love that. And I appreciate that, reminding myself, others, and also receiving the reminders through people like you. So I can now say, oh, well, this is my most current truth, if I want to use the word truth. I feel that to be true. I think that's true. What do you think? Very different.
So in essence, what that brings me back to is that, again, we should not undermine that we always need to go through a process such as true thing in order to arrive at the end result that we may call truth. But again, this is a nominalization, something that is usually an activity. It's a verb. It's something that is a process that needs to happen in order to arrive at that final result. And that final result still is a matter of processing or perceiving rather than an ultimate. And the same is true, if I want to use that word, because currently I perceive it that way, for those healing modalities that you talked about. I definitely understand, too, that I've done a lot of different modalities in training, and I've studied psychology, I've done hypnosis, NLP, neurohypnotic repatterning, design human engineering, there's reconnective healing, there's all types of energy healing, looked a little bit into shamanism, into many different religions, and so on and so on.
The Lefkoe belief work, and God knows, I mean, hanging around me is just constant work, isn't it?
Always an adventure, no doubt. And I love it because it's just so wonderful. And I also have found that none of these are really true in themselves, but rather each of them offering a process. Each of them offering a little nugget that certainly, and it's funny, even the imagery here points to things, but rather than it being a nugget, it's more like the force that allows me to move my hand and the electricity that moves around in order to create some dynamic action. And this is the action, and that action is a tool in order to achieve things, in order to move things around. When you're not feeling satisfied in your world, that also just the same needs to be created in one way or another. There are always ways to play with these different states that we create within ourselves. They don't necessarily have to be an ultimate truth. And that's also funny what psychologists have done nowadays too. They take all these processes like depression, for example, and make them a noun. They make them a diagnosis, as if now once you have depression, it is this thing that you got. It's almost like you've grown this extra ligament or something like it that now is really tough to get out. But really, there is also a part that needs to function in one way or another in order to depress oneself. It's not that you can have depression independent of the process that is doing the depressing. So that when you actually start to look at the process of becoming depressed, there's something that you need to do. and not in order to be that way. But that also means that if you change that mental behavior, you can start mixing different cocktails. You can start getting different feedback from your world, and you can start changing how you feel about your world. Because just the same way that you can create depressive thoughts, you can also create excitement. Now, those two might be very far apart. There may be many different steps in between, but both of those aren't ultimate states. They aren't ultimate things that you just get once, or the same way that people...
You get it like it's a virus.
Yeah.
I caught depression. Where do you have it? Where is it in your pocket?
It's in my pocket, yes.
I can think of better things to have in my pocket than depression. And, you know, there's just so many things are continually changing. I mean, I'm not the person I was a nanosecond ago. Quite literally, everything is always shifting. And, you know, there are some schools of thought that would have us believe that our foundational personality and all that we are was formed by the time we were 5 or 6 years old. And quite frankly, that's ridiculous. I mean, if we're really going to just be logical for a moment and be a little silly and play, let's be a little cheeky like we were when we were teenagers. I mean, come on. I know that most of us, we've had it trampled out of us through work and mortgages, and we were told not to be that way. But if we can just reconnect with that sauciness, that questioning, that inquisitive little self that is us, and we would go, really? If my entire personality was formulated by the time I was 5 or 6, and my entire ego was done by the time I was 12. I don't understand then who I am today and what happened in all those years in between, because I don't know about you, but I am very different than I was when I was 6, 7, 17, 27. Very different.
As if personality too is something that's so set in stone. And since we were talking about inquisitiveness, you can also join us on the show at the number is 1-888-627-6008. I'm going to repeat that once more. It's 1-888-627-6008. Or you can also join us at the fast chat and just ask your questions right there. Yes, and so essentially, I'm starting to understand that all these things aren't necessarily always so set.
May I just speak to that for a moment?
Yes, please go for it.
Oh, yes, you can. Actually, I want to speak just to your welcome to people to call in or join us on Fast Chat. We also have a website. You can go to the springoflifecenter.com. That's CENTER.com. And there's lots of information there, and it grows more and more every day. We also have teleconferences and radio shows. We also broadcast on another station as well on Thursdays between 3 and 5 p.m. on freedomslips.com. And that show's called The Inner Revolution.
That is on Studio B.
Studio B, yes. Studio B. B. To be or to be. How can we ever not be?
Well, in the way that we are an A here.
Oh, I love being on A, and I love BBS Radio. And I love everyone who's listening and actually being able to just have a platform to be able to speak and to be able to share. And, you know, for me, one of the most incredible things in my growth and evolution and self-awareness has been being able to work with different teachers and being able to study different modalities and techniques and having different coaches. I mean, at one point, I think I had 6 or 7 different coaches and teachers I was working with varying modalities. And there's as many ways to get real with yourself as there are people on the planet. And the one thing I can suggest to everybody and anybody, I still have one coach that's been with me for the past, I guess almost 8 years now. And I work with that coach, you know, once every couple of months and for an hour. It's a little tune-up for myself. And I would suggest to anyone and everybody, I don't care if you're a coach, a facilitator, a trainer, an athlete, a mom, a dad, a kid, an uncle, an aunt, whoever you, if you are in a body on this planet, and there's any questions you have, get yourself a coach. Now, I'd love for you to come to me or Benjamin and come to the springoflifecenter.com. And the reality is, go where you're called, because there's lots of information out there. And the one thing I do offer everyone, and I remind myself, is this: anyone who tells you to believe something that doesn't sit with you, or tries to install things that are not uplifting, or wants to do things for you, not to not guide you, because we all need a guide and to light the path. But really, people, let's stop giving our power away. It's great to ask questions. It's great to seek assistance. It's great to go into visualizations and energy work and vibrational healings and all sorts of wonderful things. I've done them all. They're amazing. But please remember, you are the master of your world. And that's why we're here. We're wanting people to empower, and that's such a cliche word too, but really to design your life on purpose, your purpose, and purposefully. Gather your skills. You know, we're not from the IST family of the psychiatrists or therapists by any means. We recognize that everyone has influence on everyone else. The question is, what kind of influence? I like to guide. I work with my coach because my coach guides me back to me, to my answers, and assists me in improving my skills and my tools and my awarenesses, my clarity to follow my dreams. And that's what I do with my clients. And that's what I want for everyone.
Well, essentially, I used to have a business coach as well. And he asked a great question. Why does Tiger Woods work with a coach? Back in the day when he was one of the best at golfing, he still worked with a coach. And the same is true for any and every single athlete that is just phenomenal at what they do. And why do they still work with a coach? Because they understand the value of having someone that knows that particular field and has that outside view. That is such a gift to have someone to bounce those ideas off of and to play with in a creative and wonderful way, because they will add in that perspective that one just cannot have. Like the same with hockey players. Everyone that is really, really good at what they do usually have one mentor or someone they work with, because if they don't, it also usually means that they are not evolved themselves. And when they're not evolving themselves, well, generally they tend to be at least somewhat stuck. And we certainly always do keep evolving ourselves. We are very intent on continuously growing not only our understandings, but ourselves, because we have come to understand that the true power, the true divinity that so many have placed outside of themselves and so many religions have placed outside of themselves actually does come from within. But the inner worlds are at least as infinite and vast as the outer world is.
Far more interesting. And the nice thing about, you know, traveling within and evolving from the inside out is that God, you'll never be bored. I promise you that. You will discover things and be able to really shift things. I mean, people say they want control, and then we have the school of thought that says there's no such thing as control. Well, I'm starting to recognize for myself as I, you know, raise up perhaps my vibration and drop more ideas and concepts and old beliefs that are limiting, that, wow, I have ultimate control in my world on the inside. I have control on what I believe. I have control in what to assess for myself, what beliefs are uplifting and exciting and wonderful, because that's how I want to live. I'm a joy junkie. I really like feeling good. And I have control to assess and eliminate those that do not. I can really begin to question and inquire within myself, and it changes my external worldview rather than my external world influencing and compressing and confining me or dictating my life. I do that. I choose for myself, and then I choose to influence the external world from a place of joy and love and happiness. And if nothing else, at least neutrality.
So if we actually do a little dip with our toes back into the spiritual worlds, when we start to believe that the power, the divine power, is actually external to us, it actually becomes so. And when we look at the chakra systems, for example, each one of us has that golden disc that is right above us. It is beyond, above, higher than our crown chakra. So it is floating above our heads. And when we do place the divine power outside of ourselves, it actually means that that divine power will go and park up there and ever so tenderly and kindly just wait for us to call it back within. Because when we do then at some point take a nice deep breath now and then allow that power to come back into our bodies and allow it to connect with our hearts and allow it to just grow and expand within our bodies, it will also start to amplify what we feel within. It will bring that divine essence and it will bring that power right back into our laps. And from that place, we are capable to start shifting our world in any which way, in any direction that does feel like it is on purpose with us. Because not only is it purposefully done, but it is aligned with the purpose that we can find for ourselves. There we can find answers and also the guidance. But then the guidance doesn't come from some esoteric place outside of ourselves anymore, but that guidance will then start to come from in the inside. And it is then not like someone else is speaking with us, but rather it is us speaking with our own divine aspects. And that point is when we start to actually regenerate our bodies. That's the time when our cells start to spin faster and regenerate faster. That's when we do start to heal ourselves mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Then we start to align all the different aspects that are us, and that most often will start by exploring your world through the mind, because the mind space seems to be that part of us that most easily clogs us up. It is the part that filters that energy that is so divine that can come into our bodies. But now, then when the ego steps in, starts to filter out, and it's almost like wearing sunglasses.
And you know, it totally. And Benjamin, you created a really superb 4-minute flash vid, his very first flash go. It's all self-taught. It's awesome. And if you go to our website, springoflifecenter.com, C-E-N-T-E-R, it's on the welcome page. And it's 4 minutes of flashy stick figure goodness that explains all of this. And it's really quite lovely. It's called, I think, The Story of Anybody. And we have about a minute left. This time has gone by so quickly this evening. I am so grateful to have this platform and to share with you. And I'm so grateful and appreciative of you listening. And I'm happy and send my warm hugs and love to our engineer. Thanks, Doug. You so rock. And also for having the station. And, you know, visit us anytime. Check out our website. Would love to have you there, and yeah, have a great evening. We got 1 minute. I could sing.
Have yourselves a wonderful week and start playing with all the different ideas and start playing with actually calling that divine power that you do carry with yourself all the time. Bring it back inside. Put your hand on your heart, take a nice deep breath, and just start imagining it like flowing back into your body like a drop of gravity onto the top of your head, right down into your head, all the way through your chest, into your hips, all the way down your legs, into your arms, such that everything is filled with divine radiance. Beautiful.
Sweet dreams. And we'll talk to you soon, and we'll see you next week.
Yeehaw.
Thank you so much.